Good morning. 9:10 a.m. Saturday, September the 17th, 2016. It's 52 degrees, mostly sunny. There's a few scattered clouds. There's a little breeze that comes up and blows for a little while and goes away. I'm not exactly sure what that means or what the significance of it is. When I was looking around to make the forecast, the weather report this morning, it was calm, and as soon as I hit share, it was lightly breezy. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. I'm wearing a little bit warmer shirt today than yesterday, which is probably a mistake because it's a little bit warmer out and sun is up a little bit higher, so I'm probably going to get overheated before I get home, but oh well, we're here, we're going to do this thing. So I made a mistake of reading my public Facebook timeline this morning. I won't be making that mistake anytime soon. The reason I did it was that I posted a link and an explanation for peer-reviewed for the very first time on my public timeline on Facebook. We'll see how it works. We'll see how it goes. I went and started digging into the stats for the site. I will get between 200 and 400 page views a day. Most people look at two pages and leave. I'm trying to decide whether or not it's worth continuing. I think it is. I think I need to run it for at least a year. It's getting more difficult to find reviews. Find reviews. It's getting more difficult for it to convince people they should send me reviews. I still think it's a valid exercise as a demonstration that while a lot of people think it's impossible to find good indie authors, the reality is it's never been easier. And I think in a lot of cases, it's they're stumbling on a reality in that when you have different voices, you're more likely to find voices you don't want to listen to. It doesn't mean those voices are invalid, or that those voices are wrong, or that those voices are somehow less than. It just means they're different. It might make you uncomfortable, like reading my public timeline on Facebook this morning made me uncomfortable. It reminded me of an article that I read, or it underscored the meaning in an article that I read. And this is going to sound weird because I have so little actual regard for The Guardian, but there was an article about the post-fact society and how we are now living in a world that facts don't matter, where facts appear to be subject to opinion, where the voices of the dissident 0.5% carry as much weight as the other 99.5%. so that we hear about the controversy on climate change, when the reality is there's very little controversy. There's a few people who, for one reason or another, think that it's hoax. While the majority of the trained professionals who are expert in this very technical kind of field are largely in agreement. It's like the old 9 out of 10 dentists agree. Well, there's always going to be one who disagrees. It doesn't necessarily mean that one is right. And while it doesn't mean necessarily that that one is wrong, it also sort of, we've lost sight of the meaning of the preponderance of the evidence. And that any time the jury isn't unanimous, then we're going to let the accused walk. And this rule is only applied in the most extreme circumstances. And most criminal, and I think, I suspect virtually all civil, I'm not really that familiar with jury instructions on civil, but the criminal, for most infractions, for most accused, preponderance of the evidence is sufficient. Appear to live in a world where loud makes right. Where logic is no longer mathematical, but subject to the whims of opinion. Where Occam's razor no longer cuts. It's an interesting situation. How do we get out of it? The Brexit vote is the one the Guardian was talking about, although they did reference the US elections. They were mostly talking about how does journalism cope in a, good morning, in a post-fact society where facts are reduced to opinions, where the people who organized the Brexit vote actually knew that what they were saying was false. But they also knew that if they put the facts out, they wouldn't be able to win. And winning was more important than the facts. Winning was more important than the truth. And I think part of what we're dealing with now is that we're dealing with a situation where winning is more important than the truth. there are some facts. There actually are some facts that aren't actually subject to dispute. Donald Trump runs an international property management company. That is a fact. How he ran that company, the way he organized how that company would interact, who he does business with, all of that is open to speculation because we don't really know, because he has no requirement for us to learn that. And other than the statements from his own mouth, we have really nothing to go on other than the fact that he runs an international property management company. Monk post there. I got it this time. I don't think I got it yesterday. Hillary Clinton served in Congress. I don't think anybody is disputing that. They might dispute her record. They might dispute what she did while she was there, but she served in Congress. She was the Secretary of State for some years. That's a matter of fact. That's a matter of public record. And as much as the public record is disparaged and ignored, those are facts. And then we come to the crux of the political discourse, and I'm not going to go there. As much as I started down that path, I'm going to stop here at the edge of the cliff and not actually jump off. But the Guardian's article got me thinking about something that I've known for a long time in my studies of social media, and that's the silo effect. The opportunity for people to only see the points of view, the information that support their worldview. And this is actually a feature of social media. It's not a bug. If somebody is saying things you don't want to see, you don't want to read, you don't want to hear, then you turn them off. And I've known about this because I look at social media as, in a certain extent, how it's used as a marketing channel, how it's used to foster communication between seller and buyer. I even have a silo that is Golden Age of the Solar Clipper. So people who are in that silo don't tend to see anything except what's going on with the Golden Age of Solar Clipper, speculation among fans, which I think is appropriate, but the idea that that might be the end of it, that there might be people in that community who hold diametrically opposed views on topics outside that silo, gets filtered out, gets pushed aside while everyone focuses on the agreed upon topics within the silo. There's an old saying. I think it's Machiavelli. I could be wrong, but looking away from the more famous, it's better to be feared than loved. I think keep your friends near, but your enemies nearer. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. I think that's Machiavelli. I could be wrong. There is a fact there that I may have lost in my mind, along with the rest of my mind. But the danger is that in the post-fact society, it's difficult to figure out who is friend, who is enemy. It's difficult to figure out which statements are truly dangerous and which statements are simply foolish. Because a lot of the dangerous statements seem foolish on their face. And yet, saying them often enough makes them true. We'll save 350 million pounds a week to pay for National Health Service. Which is one of the hallmarks, one of the main selling points of Brexit. And yet, even Nigel Farage seems to think that was a bit of hyperbole. Which is an amusing way to say wrong, false, a lie. Lies are difficult. It's hard to find, really, lies. How do you distinguish those statements that are made with intent to deceive versus those that are made with simply an ignorance of an alternate reality? People who unknowingly forward articles about Microsoft that are easily disproved with a quick Google and a consultation of Snopes. Were those lies? Did that person lie before it died, or did they generally misinformed and unaware of their lack of knowledge, unaware that they were actually forwarding a falsehood, because it was probably forwarded them in good faith by someone who thought it was not false. The one that I always look back to is the don't put plastic bottles in the freezer to make water, because the freezing releases harmful chemicals into the water and then into the ice, which you then absorb when you drink the water made in those bottles. When the reality is, no, not even close, not even a little bit. But you have to understand chemistry to make that work. You have to understand how freezing plastic doesn't release chemicals in it. Warming plastic might. And that the chemical that they're most concerned with exists in such small amounts in that plastic bottle that even if you were to eat the bottle, the chemical would be about the equivalent of one good inhale on any street in the U.S. in terms of toxicity. Which isn't to say that inhaling on any street in the U.S. is not toxic, but the point is that if you're worried about a plastic bottle, don't breathe when you go outside. This is not even feasible. This is not even practical. This is not even realistic. It's not even a thing. And yet, people that I respect, people who understand statistics, people who understand research, people who understand science, people who understand how all those things work, those people would forward this warning to me. Because social media said it was so. It's an interesting conundrum. It's an interesting idea. I think we're going to be dealing with this in the next book in large part because of Pip, in large part because Pip has, with a certain amount of purpose established facts, which are at best questionable. Enough of them are true, as far as they go, to sort of put the reader and his fellow voyagers into a place where what he says might be true. It'll be interesting to find out, for me, how much of it is. And here I am at the back gate, a fact. Tomorrow is another day, another fact. With any luck at all, I'll talk to you then. It's just an opinion.